Hello again, and welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, episode 267. This is the weekly podcast about American flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community as we discuss the vital topics of saving our domestic flower farms and supporting a floral industry that relies on a safe, seasonal, and local supply of flowers and foliage. This podcast is brought to you by slowflowers.com, the free, nationwide online directory to florists, shops, and studios who design with American-grown flowers, and to the farms that grow those blooms. It's the conscious choice for buying and sending flowers. Last week, you learned about my September visit to the Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, North Carolina area, where I spent 3 days visiting local flower farms and florists, including teaching a Slow Flowers creative workshop. Just prior to that visit, I had a swift side trip on Saturday, September 17th, a drive from Philadelphia to Hudson Valley, New York, at the invitation of Mary Beth Waring of Stars of the Meadow. There is a lot happening in New York's Hudson Valley farming scene, and I've been eager to learn more. I previously featured some of the voices of this region, which you may recall from episode 189 when I interviewed Jen Elliott and Luke Franco of Tiny Hearts Flower Farm in Copaic, New York, and from episode 233 when Gloria Collins of GBC Style and I discussed the transportation challenges between designers like her and flower farms in the Hudson Valley. During the past 2 years, the local flower farming landscape has greatly expanded, gathering up people like Mary Beth and several others who now participate in the Hudson Valley Flower Growers Network. I joined up with some of the members last month in the town of Hudson, where we had a Slow Flowers meetup and a great conversation about the state of their region, which I recorded to share with podcast listeners. First, you will hear my 30-minute conversation recorded at Back to Basics Farm in Acord, New York, where Mary Beth's business, Stars of the Meadow, is based, a self-described one-woman-powered acre. Stars of the Meadow offers locally and sustainably grown specialty flowers and foliage. Inspired by permaculture, biodynamics, and regenerative agriculture, Mary Beth grows more than 100 seasonal varieties of lush, vibrant blooms, foliages, and herbs. After we toured Mary Beth's microfarm, we drove about 30 minutes north to Hudson, where we met others in the Hudson Valley Flower Growers Network. Before you have a listen, let me introduce those, in addition to Mary Beth, who participated in our roundtable discussion. You'll first meet Angela DeFelice of Rock Steady Farm and Flowers in Millerton, New York. Angela grew up outside of Rochester, New York, in a small town surrounded by fields of corn, soybeans, and cows. After she studied ecological horticulture at the University of California, Santa Cruz Center for Agroecology and Sustainable Food Systems, she worked 2 years at the Poughkeepsie Farm Project, where she managed the low-income CSA program. She went on to co-manage Huguenot Street Farm, a 12-acre vegetable CSA farm in New Paltz, New York. Angela was first introduced to flower growing while farming in California, and over time fell in love with the challenge and beauty of growing flowers, which brought her to Saul Flower Farm, where she built the cut flower enterprise from the ground up. Off the farm, Angela has a serious passion for dancing and wading ankle-deep in creeks, catching salamanders. Next, please meet April Kinzer of April Flowers in Kingston, New York. April Kinzer and Brittany Sideri began working together in 2013, combining a love of flowers with their backgrounds of working with flowers and the landscape, as well as years of event planning and management. Trained as a visual artist, April designed the celebrity path at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden and created several site-specific environmental artworks in the New York City area and the Catskills. She is a recipient of a New York Foundation for the Arts Fellowship in Architecture for her environmental installations. She has designed wedding flowers since 2006. April grew up in Portland, Oregon, the city of roses, and then moved to New York City to study art. She lived there for over 25 years before moving to the Hudson Valley in 2003. And finally, you'll hear from Jenny Elliott of Tiny Hearts Farm. As you learned in our prior interview a few years ago, Jenny farms with her husband, Luke. She brought Emily, one of the farm's designers, who you'll also hear in this conversation. By the time we finish up, this episode goes over 1 hour, so set aside plenty of time to listen. The Hudson Valley Flower Growers Network is part of an emerging phenomenon in our Slow Flowers community, as we're witnessing regional floral hubs that make economic and geographic sense for those who yearn to share resources, contacts, knowledge, and energy. I'm excited to bring these conversations to you today, and I hope the voices you hear inspire you and perhaps prompt you to form similar networks in your area. There are many of you who have done so already, and I'd love to hear from you for future episodes of this podcast. Hi, Mary Beth. Can you introduce yourself?
Hi. I'm Mary Beth Waring, and we're here at Stars of the When you're stewarding someone else's land, the name of your business might not be the name of the farm. So this place has been called Back to Basics Farm, although my business is called Stars of the Meadow.
Great.
Flowers, in parentheses.
Great. Okay, yeah. And
so
what town are we
distinction.
In?
Distinction. We're in Accord, New York, which is in the beautiful Hudson River Valley of
that's
New
great.
York State.
So you're stewarding land where other farming activities happen, and you, what portion of it is for Stars of the Meadow?
So about, I'd say probably a three-quarters of 1 acre is split up between field-grown flowers and some growing in hoop house, in ground beds in hoop house, which I'll show you.
Should we walk over there?
Yeah.
Okay, great. What do you emphasize? Are you only doing annuals, or are you adding perennials? And I see you have dahlias here like crazy.
Yeah. I started about 5-ish years ago, and I started with only annuals. And so as the years have gone, I've started some perennials from seed, and I've stewarded 3 different pieces of land owned by other people at this point.
In this area.
Yeah. So I've kind of, each time I've dug up and brought my perennial collection along, and it's prevented me from investing
right.
in what I would like to have a larger perennial stock.
Sure.
And peonies and all the things that are an investment that would have to be removed if I,
sure.
you know,
flowering
have
shrubs.
To go somewhere else. Yeah. Woodies, all the stuff that takes a little while to get going. So I don't have tons, but I'm on my 3rd growing location, so now I've brought 2 times I've brought the perennials.
Do you think you'll be able to stay here for the foreseeable future, or you mentioned that you might be in kind of flux again.
Right, yeah, yeah. So the owner is considering selling it next year at this time, so I'd have an option to buy it. I'd have first dibs to buy it, or some kind of creative solution with a potential buyer who might continue to lease me the land, or something, some sort of arrangement where I could rent to, like, lease to own. I'm not really sure. It's
There's
news.
a lot of options then. Wow.
Yeah.
And how are you a Hudson Valley native, or
no,
how did you get up here?
I grew up in Owego, New York, which is kind of near Binghamton, so and the Finger Lakes in the middle of the state. And I came to SUNY New Paltz College in 99. And
that's in the Hudson Valley, New Paltz, I
at SUNY New Paltz, it's a state college. And I loved it here. And I studied ceramics. I have an art degree. And then thought I was going to, you know, apply to all these residencies and things after I graduated. And the thing that I ended up getting was in Rosendale. Ironically, I already lived in Rosendale. So I stayed and worked there for 6 years at the Women's Studio Workshop in Rosendale.
Doing art.
Doing art and teaching pottery and ceramics. And I guess during that time I had always gardened, but I started growing medicinal plants for herbal medicine and to make herbal medicine, and then did an herbal CSA with 2 others.
Cool.
For 3 years, where we operated a 25-member CSA, where we grew all the plants and dried them and made teas and salves and elixirs and, like, value-added herbal medicine products. And while I was doing that, I started playing around with growing flowers and selling them, and that kind of helped launch the flower growing part.
Wow.
And then we did, you know, concluded the CSA after 3 years, and I also had other jobs in between. I worked at a school while it was doing that, and then fully took on the cut flowers.
Wow. And I kind of thought you were going to tell a story about being a ceramic artist who wanted to grow flowers for her vases, but maybe that wasn't the kind of ceramic work you were doing.
It wasn't. It could have been, but...
That's another option.
That's not how I got there, but it definitely, that would make sense.
Wow. Well, this is beautiful. I commented to you that I saw three deer on the road on my way here. So how big is that fence that's surrounding this?
That's 8-foot fence.
And that will pretty much protect what's inside? They can't jump this, can they?
They won't. They will come in the gate if we leave it open, but skunks, woodchucks, rabbits, voles are big pests that do come right in. Mm-hmm. So they can fit right through those, whatever, six inch squares or whatever. So.
But you've got this organized so beautifully. So on right we have mostly raspberry. Are you growing raspberry that's for foliage or for the fruit or both?
I'm using, we're all using the fruit right now.
Sure,
and I am using
beautiful.
Some of the foliage, but the owner, Linda Brooke, had a small veggie CSA here for several years, and that because she comes from an extensive farm background, so that was, part of her goal when she bought this place, and then had kids, and CSA and veggie growing was way too much and not so lucrative for her, so she shifted to the seedlings.
What a neat idea.
Yeah.
And well, you said food and flower seedlings.
Yeah, so like things that home gardeners would want to buy, veggies, herbs.
So then she's selling through garden centers, nurseries, grocery stores.
Yep, some of that, and right here her own sales. Mm-hmm.
So back to the raspberry, is it the thornless or not?
Nope, thorny.
I just ran into that, somebody using the thorny in... Iowa, and it just didn't seem to be a problem,
Yeah.
For it's beautiful in arrangements.
Yeah. And some are thornier than others.
Right. But. And the pokeweed, is that just a volunteer?
That's a volunteer. And
it's gorgeous.
So you can see I've really cut it hard. Cause that's the happiest, most beautiful one right there with all the broken down wood chips and stuff that goes on the raspberries. So it's really...
it's cranking
it's like
it.
A plant that's a weed that when it... gets in a really nice soil, it'll be an even more beautiful weed,
More lush.
Yeah, more lush, and so I sell it to florists, I use it.
Oh, yeah.
Use it for boutonnieres,
people
flower
love
crowns,
it.
All kinds of stuff.
Very cool. And then your dahlias are just looking really healthy, but you've got the mesh bags over the flowers.
Yeah. Yep.
And is that the cucumber beetle, or what are
cucumber beetle, and I think maybe thrips. Mm-hmm. Earwigs I see mm-hmm. on there, probably other stuff. I don't have too much knowledge about insects, but...
But you know what you have to do to protect your flowers.
Yeah, I see that they chew anywhere from, this stage on.
Right.
They'll start chewing.
Right.
So, even this one I could bag right now.
Uh-huh.
And but I bag them, at this stage.
And you're indicating about just when the bud is starting to kind of pop open and some of the outer petals are separating from the bud.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's labor intensive. I mean, I hope people understand that that's why dahlias go for $2-3 a stem, right?
Right.
And
in conventional, I don't know what extra stuff that people are doing that are spraying and chemicals and stuff too, but even this is just labor. And
sure. And the cost of buying these mesh bags.
Yeah. Putting them on and off and...
Yeah, those brides better appreciate it. I see that, a lot of the white ones are protected.
Yeah, because they like the light color ones, they seem to.
Is that right?
Bugs.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's what I've found, but then they'll also chew certain things that I wouldn't think. So I always aim to do all the light colored ones, but then
smart.
I see what they chew, and then I... But I've been cutting very hard. You can see not a lot of blooms here.
Yeah.
Because I had two big bulk wedding orders this week, and so...
That's great.
Cut me
so, hard. Let's just keep walking down here. So you have your glads look like they're kind of done blooming.
Done.
Beautiful. I love glads, though.
Me too. Thank you.
I am in love
with
them.
Thank you. I want to bring them back.
I know. There's sort of this anti-glad thing going on. But there was an anti-bearded iris thing going on, too, and that seems to have slightly subsided.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, certainly there's so much room for breeding and promoting varieties that are great and aren't the run-of-the-mill. bright colors.
Right. I mean, there's just some bicolored ones, some miniatures.
Yeah, the minis, the ruffly. Mm-hmm. There's blush, white, and light colored ones.
And you're doing design, right? As well as growing.
I don't do event design.
Okay, but you just sent your friends off with some exquisite bouquets.
Thank you.
Mary Beth, you designed
those,
right? Thank
you. Okay, yes, I do a little bit. Yeah.
I guess I was just going to say that, you know, like there is that role for a line flower or a spike or a that will pop up above the bouquet, and the glads do fill that role. Yeah.
And when they're 3 feet long, you can snip the top, and then it's only 2 feet long.
Oh, there
There's
you go.
Just ways that you can
get it to where you want it to be.
Yeah, I think.
What do you do with the castor bean?
I use the pods in arrangements.
Mm. Gorgeous.
You can see they're almost gone too.
Yeah. So the fuzzy bright red pods. So where would you cut that?
This I probably wouldn't use unless I just plucked, and I'll do like boutonnieres, or I'll wire these. I'll stick a wire in and twist it and put them on crowns.
Okay.
Or put them in.
It doesn't need a long stem, in other words.
Well, for an arrangement, like look down the row.
Yes.
See that one that is
that's
taller one?
Yeah.
The red.
Oh, on the right.
Yeah, like that I would cut.
Sure.
Like a two, maybe 1.5 foot long.
Sure, that could go in a... Do you use the foliage at all, or does it not hold up?
It doesn't hold up.
Because it's really for the pods.
Because it's so beautiful.
I used to grow it in my garden in Seattle just for a tropical look, just to be dramatic. And
it's so dramatic.
I know I had children and dogs, but somehow it was in the middle of a border that they couldn't get to it.
Mm-hmm.
But
from what I read, you have to really chew a good amount of seeds, chew them really well to get
affected.
Poisoned.
Okay, good.
Although some people do have contact dermatitis from the foliage, but
you're not using the foliage.
I haven't had an issue, and there's so many, like, for florists and designers, it's like every other plant is a threat of, you know, a reaction of some kind, so.
Just wear gloves, wear long sleeves.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Lesson learned. And is that basil past that you have? And
yep,
great.
Lemon basil, and there's a story with this bed why the things further down didn't thrive this year, but, so, yeah.
Everything looks great. And then,
thank you for September. Not so bad, right?
No. I mean, what is you have drip irrigation, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And where is your water coming from?
The water, it's all a well here. It's
okay.
A small well. We don't irrigate heavily because, as you can see, there's the house, a cottage, and the farm to all share the same well.
So you're really cautious about your usage.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we drip irrigate, but sparingly. And I mulch everything. You can see almost every bed is mulched with hay.
So like, you're trying to keep your moisture in the soil.
Yeah.
Okay.
So my background in farming is, it's not really so much in farming, but in permaculture.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're all no-till permanent beds.
It's fabulous.
Including this, which is the owner's veggie garden.
So we've looked at this one side where you all have all your rows, and maybe I'll take a few photos. And then there's a nice long central path, and then on the other side there's some more beds. And then the veggie garden, do you pick from that at all, or is that really your property owner's?
The property owner, although, you know, she gives me stuff all the time.
Yeah, looks like she has looks like she has a few flowers over there.
Yeah, and I'll show you one little trunk where I've got some. And we're growing so much. I mean, I'm growing. She is too, but not for her, you know, not for her business.
Mm-hmm.
On
more
this
for
field mm-hmm. part. But I'm really cramming in so much into a tiny space.
You're so intensively planted, but nothing looks like it's suffering.
I don't think so.
How far apart are your rows, roughly?
Most of them are about 1 foot. Like, this one might be two.
Uh-huh.
1.5 or two over there. They seem to get tighter and tighter.
Right, right. You can walk through them, but you can't always run
a cart through. Sometimes a wheelbarrow, but... So it's an all-hand scale thing. So we have a tractor, but we only used it once to kind of hill the beds.
Initially,
yeah. And that was all. So everything is hand scale. I weed whack the paths.
Love it.
So mower and weed whacker are really like the biggest machines we've got going on here.
Is this your third season or your second season on this land?
Third on this land,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
I only started growing a little bit here. And so last year and this year were like full growing seasons where I really carefully planned successions here and managed things, you know, through the season. So I have things growing now rather than
Right.
When I first started out, I think I just planted things in May and then was like, oh, nothing left in August and September.
So you've really been, because I see where you've got shorter crops that are amaranth.
Yeah, like and the, newly planted. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the snapdragons are beautiful.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, my gosh. So gorgeous. Well, let's keep walking, and I want to ask you to describe, like, your customer makeup and how you're selling your flowers. Are you, because you mentioned do-it-yourself weddings.
Oh, yeah. So, I didn't really know how to specialize when I first, you know, a couple years ago, and I've tried some different angles, and last year I tried, like, directly to restaurants and some different things while I still had my couple of wholesale bouquet orders and people that I knew who wanted to just buy bouquets every so often and a couple designers, florists. So it's like it's so varied. There were like all these different avenues. And this year I really focused on designers, adding a couple more florists and designers to my list and that has worked out really well.
To sell. And probably given them the assurance that there's a steady stream of local flowers.
Yeah, because they didn't know, and it actually for a couple customers, it's taken a couple years for them to see that they can depend on that. And as my growing skills have gotten higher, and the product that I can offer them quality has gotten better, and the volume has increased, they feel more confident that they can that it'll be available and that they can source things locally. It can be done.
Yeah, absolutely. How many different varieties or I guess variety is kind of a vague word. How many genuses of flowers and botanicals are you growing? Like at least, it's like 30
know.
Or 40 at least.
Probably 30 to 40.
Yeah.
And it's a small place. As I said, I grow kind of small amounts of each thing. And a lot of it is fun and just because I love it. So I may have, you know, 8 to 10 bunches of something available, of one thing available to my list of 6 or 8 florists. So
right, first dibs.
Yeah, it's kind of first dibs, and but probably 30 to 40, I'd say.
That's beautiful. It's so beautiful.
And some, as you're indicating, there are many varieties within a genus. So
right.
Like Seloja, there's like a bunch of varieties of Seloja, but if you call Seloja one,
then
that's my one.
But you're offering different colors, different forms, and that sort of thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is this asparagus?
Yeah, yep.
Okay, are you selling it as foliage?
I do, yeah.
Wow, so it's gorgeous.
I basically thank Linda Brook for, you know, planting the perennial food crops like raspberry and asparagus when she had done the CSA that are still here, and that she eats and her family eat, but that I am able to use for foliage material.
Brilliant, exactly, because it doesn't affect the ability to eat the asparagus for you to clip the foliage, right?
Right, as long as there's a certain amount there. And I've cut, not heavily, but I've definitely cut on this, and you can see it has no issue with not having enough foliage.
Wonderful. And then obviously the raspberry foliage, you're cutting before, during, and after fruiting.
Mm-hmm.
So you've gotten, that's sort of a nice, consistent delivery of interesting green foliage that
it rotates.
Florists want.
Yeah, I mean, people really, they're saying that greens, foliage, like, what do you have for foliage? That's like the big...
I agree. I totally agree. In fact, I think that that's sort of the secret sauce for some of the growers that I know so well in Washington State, that it's sort of lower maintenance, and it's, you know, a pretty standardized in bunching and pricing, so it's like a perfect, consistent source of revenue. Well, I love what you're doing. I know we're going to talk later about the Hudson Valley Flower Growers Cooperative
network at this point.
Network. Sorry, you told
maybe
me that.
Going towards cooperative. We're not
okay.
Sure.
Good. So we're going to meet some other people too. So we'll let's go get lunch and then we can talk about that later. Does that sound
great.
Good?
Okay. That sounds great.
Introduce yourself, and we'll just go around the table and introduce who's here and then talk about what your farm is and where it is. And
sure. I'm Angela DeFelice, and I'm with Rocksteady Farm and Flowers, and we're in Millerton, New York, a couple hours north of New York City.
Okay. And how far from Hudson? Because we're meeting in Hudson right now.
Yeah, we're about 45 minutes from here.
Oh, okay.
Southeast.
Nothing's close, is it?
In the Hudson Valley.
It's a big valley.
Yeah.
We first met in Wilmington at the ASCFG, mm-hmm. and then we met again this past winter when I was in New York, and Molly Culver put that little party together, right?
Yeah, and in New York.
That's when you told me that you were changing your business a little bit. Can you talk about that?
Sure, yeah. I had been growing flowers for another business, and this winter we had the opportunity, myself and two other women, to take over the farm and have reinvented with a different model. And so we are a vegetable and cut flower farm. And I grow about an acre and a half of flowers. I have two high tunnels. And our main production season is May through October when we're selling.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
Yeah.
And are you kind of flower chief and they're veggie chiefs? Or is
yeah.
that how division of labor takes
yeah.
place?
I'm the flower manager and mm-hmm. then the two of them operate the vegetable operation.
Great. So. How did you meet April and Mary Beth?
Through the farming network, and we started putting out feelers to folks mm-hmm. That were growing flowers, and there's more and more of us now, but there were just a few people I feel like that
kind of raised their hand and said I'm here.
Yeah. And so April, I'm not really sure how we met originally, but it was just through cut flowers.
It was at, I think, the second meeting of this group. I know mm-hmm. it wasn't at the first.
Yeah, I wasn't
like,
in the first
forming mm-hmm. meeting.
Okay, that's Mary Beth talking. When was that when was the first meeting? When was Angela behind that, or?
Yeah, that was the winter of 2013, I think.
Okay.
And there were a handful of growers that got together just to say, hello, we are flower growers, and this is, you know, what are we doing? Who are we? Is there, you know, a way we can support each other, information we can share? Just general networking and relationship building.
So we're coming up on, that was 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so then the second meeting happened, and you two both heard about it, or?
I'm trying to remember. It might have been, was it at Stone Barns when, like, a big showing happened and, like, a lot of things kind of...
I think it might have been the
kinda,
third meeting, but...
Okay.
Okay.
That might have been... might be the first one for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I met April there.
April, can you introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about your farm?
Yeah, April Kinzer, and my business is called April Flowers.
So April Flowers, not April Flowers. April's Flowers.
Okay. Yeah, April Flowers. And I'm in just outside of Kingston, about 50 minutes from here.
Okay. And how old's your farm?
Well, I've been dabbling for the last 10 years, and the last 3 years seriously growing. But I've had a farm stand for about 10 years.
For flowers. Wow.
So it's just very small. It's a shabby, chic, little hammered-together stand. And I have an honor box.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm primarily supported by people that live around me.
Mm-hmm.
Because
neighbors.
Conversations. Yeah, neighbors and people that go by my road.
And are they year-round residents, or is it like the weekenders, or?
It's both.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really both.
Wow.
One of the sweet things about that is a lot of my customers are men, and they're getting flowers for their girlfriends or wives. And they sometimes come on anniversaries, and I'll cut them a bouquet. And it's just very touching to me that they say, well, I come by and I buy, you know, the smaller bouquets, but I want something special for my wife or my girlfriend.
Like that's their Friday night ritual or something like that.
Maybe not that often.
Oh, mm-hmm.
You know, it's a lot of working people in the area that may be intimidated to go into a florist. At least that's my husband's thought, because mm-hmm. he has witnessed this when he goes shopping for me on Valentine's Day. And he said usually the men are quite nervous in the florist. But these guys are so sweet, and they pull up in their pickup trucks, and I, you know, cut them a bouquet.
You're accessible.
Yeah. It's really one of the pleasures of... The farm stand is one of the big pleasures of my very small flower farm, which I'm calling this year a cutting garden because it's only a quarter of an acre.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on an acre of land that I could cultivate, but I'm only growing on roughly a little over a quarter of an acre.
Okay. And Mary Beth has an acre and a half, right, about, that you're growing on,
it's
counting the high tunnels?
Three quarters.
Oh, three quarters. One. Okay. And Angela, did you say?
Acre and a half.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's what I mixed up.
Well, when you joined this group, how did you hear about it, April? Did you just, you said Mary Beth told you about it, or?
We didn't know each other
I don't
yet.
Know. I must have heard it from you, but I honestly don't remember how our paths crossed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. I guess people find each other, right?
Mysteriously came together.
You harmonic convergence.
Well, it's funny because there's so few flower growers that people are like, oh, did you hear about that one person?
You should know
an
her.
An hour and a half away from you that's growing flowers.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, hey, let's reach out. Mm-hmm. And so we just started a listserv and we just started adding people to it so that we had some way of communicating with the whole group instead of just this glom of 15 people. And now we have almost 40 people on the list, some of which are folks that are growing and designing in New York, all the way up close to Albany. I mean, it's really the full valley of people that are on it.
What is that valley? I was asking Mary Beth because it seemed like everything's at least an hour away. Is it?
Yeah.
It's like the distance of a 200 mile from top to bottom kind of valley, or
Albany, New York.
Well, you were saying you're
140, 150.
Okay.
150.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Miles north to south.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I don't know, we don't have everybody in the network. I mean, I'm learning about new people all the time.
Right.
All the time. And some of the largest growers,
of course,
you know, are not, I mean, they don't know who we are. Yeah. And,
when you say largest, you mean more like conventional growers or
65 acres.
Yes. Sure.
Yeah. Longer term growers.
Yeah.
Too,
second generation farms.
Years.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of us are startup. A lot of us are new farmers. A lot of us are,
So what was the intent? I understand that there wasn't even a name at first, right?
Yeah. I mean, we just loosely call ourselves the Hudson Valley Flower Growers Network.
Okay.
And I think we're still in many ways trying to figure out our intent.
Mm-hmm.
It has served us in many ways. I mean, we share information. We sell flowers to each other because several people within the group both grow and design. And many people are small, so for events, need extra product. We have had collective plant and bulb orders. You know, Mary Beth has represented, you know, the group and the event in New York.
Mm.
We put on a training together. Mm-hmm. We share information about marketing and brides.
Priceless.
A few of us have collaborated to do some transportation of flowers. I mean, every time we get together, we talk about how do we collaborate on transportation, but it's such a big undertaking.
Yeah.
None of us have been able to, like, take this step and do it. So I think, I mean, it's really loose networking, and it just keeps, you know, shifting to meet our needs, and I think it'll evolve over time.
So somebody who has an interest maybe steps forward to take the lead on something and then asks for help. And I guess the example would be this training. I only knew about it when I heard that you had met at Etsy before. When was that?
In July.
Mid-July.
Okay. This year. So how did that come together? Did you get grant money or?
We worked in partnership with Cornell Cooperative Extension.
Oh, you mentioned that. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, because we've been, I know April was like, you know, a good, strong advocate for us. And, you know, I'd been talking to Cooperative Extension as well about just getting flower growers on the map. You know, like vegetable production, grain production, animal production is all on the map and no one's doing anything for cut flower production. They do floriculture, like greenhouse.
Nursery
stuff. And so it was through that conversation where, like, we have these really specific needs. And so Liz at Corporate Extension was willing to step up and put some time and energy behind it. And we found a couple sponsors. You know, she helped coordinate a lot of the details. Yeah.
The administrative
aspect of it.
So was it like a one-day workshop or... That's cool. And how did were you three involved in planning that or?
Yeah, I think we were on the planning committee and with one other. Who was the other person? Someone else?
Gloria.
No, maybe
Gloria.
Three of us.
Yeah. Oh yeah, she told me that. So Gloria Collins would be an example of somebody who's primarily designing, buying from people in this network, and then doing a little bit of growing herself. I know she's among florists who are saying we want this product.
Yeah.
How do we get it down to the city and? So you didn't discuss transportation at the training. It was more about farming.
Yeah, the training was really specific on high tunnel production.
Okay.
You know, in this climate, you know, the wedding seasons are on our shoulder seasons. And so, you know, if you're going to hit anything that's March, April, May, or, you know, October, November, you really need to be thinking about season extension.
Sure.
And
high tunnels allow that.
And high tunnels allow that, whether unheated or heated. And so there was a big desire to do that. And we had a lot of ideas. I mean, the list of things that we wanted to know as a group of growers was huge. And I think,
you know, it, we realized we needed to narrow down, and it, there probably will be more trainings. I mean, mm-hmm. I think it was really great to have something, you know, local. Mm-hmm. It was great to see the amount of people that came out, all mm-hmm. sorts of people that we had no idea.
Yeah. So now you kind of have this threshold of interest, and you can build on that.
Yeah.
Wow.
So mm-hmm. it was good. I think it went well for trying to put together our first event. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you already had a high tunnel, both Mary Beth and Angela. But you don't have one, April.
No.
Are you thinking about getting one?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. My operation is so small, and I'm going to be doing everything myself. And I have to be really careful about my investment.
Sure.
And I have a challenging piece of land to work on that sometimes floods. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to think of what can I grow that I can manage by myself. And that's where I'm at with my mm-hmm. business right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of even season extension, that's sort of in the future if you ever go that route. Right now you're happy with field grown.
Yes, cutting garden. Beth actually grows things for me and in her greenhouse that, you know, I put together a list and she... You know, I asked her last year to grow, and she grew a lot of seedlings for mm-hmm. me, which was great.
Oh, great.
And I buy from her. And when I do weddings, I sometimes buy from her if I need it.
So was you, but you weren't uninterested in the training. It still sounds like it really met other needs for you, like networking and...
Yeah, I think the networking is really important, mm-hmm. as Angela said, just relationship building. I mean, Mary Beth is a buddy. Angela, I don't get mm-hmm. to see that often, but yeah. I consider her a buddy that
she's
I could call.
Right.
Because I've gotten to know her. We've had lunch once. And it's just nice to know there are other women out there growing. And you could just talk about the challenges that you have. And
right.
And I've also learned a lot from Mary Beth in terms of growing. She's been fantastic. And
that's funny because today she said she didn't know what she was doing. I was like, yes, you do.
But don't women always say that?
Well, I also think the more you farm, the less you realize you know.
Yeah.
I feel like I know less every year.
It's true.
I was better off when I started and knew nothing. Yeah. Now it's humbling to know how much I don't know.
I just interviewed somebody who's going to be on the podcast next week. This Megan, I'm going to call her out. She's going to laugh when she hears this. Megan McGuire from Red Daisy Farm, and she's in her third season. She's like, I don't know, my dahlias the first year were awesome, and like everything went downhill after that.
Yeah.
And we were just joking that it must have been naive beginner's luck or something.
I had such a fabulous first year. Wow. When I started this, it was unbelievable.
Wow. Yeah. And what year was that?
Let me think. I think it was 2006.
I'm going to ask each of you how and why you got into flower farming. So mm-hmm. since we started talking about 2006, that's 10 years for you, April.
Yeah, I moved up here from New York City. And as I mentioned, I've been a practicing artist. And all of my work was about honoring nature and did environmental installations.
Oh, my goodness.
And I've been an avid gardener for many years at a weekend house. And then I was just in the middle of farmland. And I just got the bug to actually take it up to another level.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of having beds, having a cutting garden. And then an acquaintance recommended a couple books to read. And then I just decided to go for it.
You went down the rabbit hole, too.
Yeah, I had this acre that I could play with. And I had all the trees taken down. And I had it plowed. And beginner's luck, I had a phenomenal first season.
Wow. And that was in 2006?
Yes.
And that's, is that when you started doing the honor box and the roadside stand?
Yeah, all along I've done that.
Wow, that's so cool. Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to say, because you do an MFA and you come have this fine art background, that you wanted to grow flowers to draw or to uh-huh. do printmaking or I don't know what medium. You said installation, so
uh-huh.
I'm sure that's... That maybe
I think
happened.
that might be down the pike. I've been thinking about it lately, especially as I might scale back a little bit in combining mm-hmm. the two.
Blend them both. See, that's what I was accusing earlier when I recorded Mary Beth. I said, well, you were a ceramic artist, so you must have started to grow flowers to put in your vases. And she's like, it wasn't that organized, or I don't know what you said. But, you know, now I'm challenging you to do, Stars of the Meadow pottery series or something like that.
That'd be amazing.
Great. One more job for you to do.
Don't tell my old ceramics friends. They'll be like, yes, we've got you back. You're going to do it
again. Yeah. Angela, how did you get into growing?
I was farming vegetables for
you said that.
A while before I grew cut flowers.
But how did you even start farming?
I think the entry point was through sustainability and wanting to be able to sustain myself. And I did some work on farms internationally.
Wow.
And had a little bit different perspective on ag and the impact of big ag, how some small communities were organizing around small ag and sustainable ag, and seed sovereignty. That was actually another big piece.
What does that mean?
Where communities have control over their own genetic resources.
Got it. Right.
As opposed to large multinational corporations who want to patent seeds.
Right.
You know, the folks that have been breeding the seeds for ever actually can maintain that, and that's where their food source comes from, their income comes from, when communities are based in ag,
right?
And they need to be able to maintain control over that.
I love that term. That
makes sense.
It's different than preserving heirloom varieties, which is sort of a tangential goal I've run across.
To maintain the broad diversity, I feel like, is when you talk about, oh, let's maintain heirloom varieties, there's a broad genetic base, but actually the right to the seed genetics and having that be maintained within the community.
Sure. And you're talking about global community, like what other countries and particular farming neighborhoods or farming communities, even in the U.S.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so that was kind of like this entry point. Mm-hmm. And then I apprenticed with a couple farmers. I did the program at the Center for Agroecology and Sustainable Food Systems in California.
Oh, you did?
So, yeah. CASFIS.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I got to visit that last summer. That was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And Christoph was a guest on this podcast, so I got to hear about have you heard about this program? And it's like people go to learn how to grow food, but they leave being flower farmers.
That is funny. I left never thinking I'd be a flower farmer.
Really?
I was so food justice, social justice, and that's really where I went. And then I just hit a turning point, and I felt like I needed some new learning, new inspiration. And the flower world, I feel like there's so many, different crops to grow. There's so many more challenges. There's just not a lot of people doing it. So it felt like a little bit of a frontier, figuring it out. And so, I transitioned out of a vegetable management position. And,
You knew how to farm. You were just changing your concentration.
Yeah.
And you still think you had beginner's luck the first season?
Yeah. Yeah. So
when we met, I think, especially when we spoke in February, when I was, we were in, Lower East Side, Manhattan, we were in Brooklyn, the topic of transportation, getting flowers from where they're grown to where the concentration of designers and clients are was sort of, we discussed that briefly, but how is the Hudson Valley Network addressing that, or is it just sort of conceptual now, you're not quite there with a program or a plan?
As a group of growers, we're not there with a plan.
Okay.
As individual growers, individual growers have reached the tipping point of needing to make it happen.
Okay.
The last few years, I hadn't hit the tipping point, and this year I did.
Okay.
And so we figured it out, and I've been doing deliveries to Brooklyn every week.
Wow. How far is that for you?
About 3 hours.
Each way?
Yeah. With traffic, about 3 hours.
Wow.
So
you go by yourself with only your flowers, or are you taking flowers from other farms as well?
No, at this point, it's just ours.
Uh-huh.
We've had vehicle limitations and capacity, and that was a huge thing this spring and trying to figure out how to do that. I think we have our eye towards collaboration, and that was the intent. There's lots of conversations this spring about that, around that. But as the first year is our own operation is Rocksteady, there's only so much we can make happen.
But Rocksteady had enough product to take to clients. And where is it proprietary, or can you talk about where you deliver? Like what cities or what type of customers?
Yeah, mostly event designers.
Okay.
Some of the folks that were at the meeting in New York. So Molly Oliver, Stems. I mean, Stems is an actual brick and mortar floor shop.
Susanna.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Indie Faso is another one. Taproot, she's been a great customer this year. So a lot of folks in Brooklyn.
And do you go door to door, or do you have a single place that they have to come and meet you?
We go door to door.
Wow.
I talked to several of them over the winter to think about how that might work. And it's still an idea. But when it comes down to it, people want you to show up to their door. Mm-hmm. And if you can offer that service, it's going to get you more sales.
Right.
And right. So that's how we've done it this year. Mm-hmm. And I'm interested to sit down with the designers and my customers and see, yeah, how the season went, what they need from us, what opportunities mm-hmm. are. Sit down with the growers and see what kind of collaborations, now that I have a better sense of what it means for our farm to be going.
What a route can look like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like where there is room or not room in our current capacity. Huge learning curve. But
that's amazing.
But overall went well.
So you're giving up one day a week primarily to do this. It must take all day.
We hire a driver.
Oh, okay. So it's not you personally.
It's not me personally.
Oh, good. Oh, I feel better.
I can't. Yeah. We also grow vegetables. And uh-huh. so and we actually send a vehicle down. I mean, we've been sending vehicles twice a week to New York. Mm-hmm. So we hired someone to help mm-hmm. with that driving. Mm-hmm. So.
That's amazing. And Mary Beth, you pretty much are where it sounds like you've got enough customers in your 30-minute radius in all directions that are demand. You can fulfill that demand, and you don't have the push to go out down to Brooklyn or to New York yet. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah. Uh-huh.
But maybe in the future?
I sort of started by deciding I didn't want to go.
Oh, right. You said you didn't want to be in the car.
My farm's so small, and I'm just me. So I decided, plus I love the idea that the flowers grown here can go to people here, and that, you know, the whole area around New York City doesn't have to just be like
serving the hub,
farmed by New York City mm-hmm. to bring mm-hmm. down. And I'm glad people are doing it. I'm so glad you're doing it. I just thought, let me just try first to see if I can sell everything I can grow on my small space
right
to this general right. area without having to go too far, and I'll try that.
We did talk about that. I forgot that you said you were really trying to keep it within. You just didn't want to live in the car.
Yeah.
Which is why Angela has a driver.
Right, yeah. Right. She has a driver because she's got to be on farm, and I do too. So.
Yeah. And April is making people come to her too.
Right. But I sell at two retail places that Mary Beth also sells to.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And they're both really supportive of Hudson Valley Flowers. And it's nice that, you know, people have a choice.
Mm-hmm. So you are making that delivery then?
I am making those two deliveries. And I'm also growing for weddings.
Well, and I wanted to say the arrangement that we have here, we're looking at, I have to take a photo of flowers from Stars of the Meadow, but somehow, I don't know, I was in the restroom, I came out, and they started with Mary Beth and got finished by April. the design is beautiful. So you're doing a lot of wedding
work?
Well,
she started it. I just put a couple flowers
Well,
in.
Yeah. These
yeah, I just put a couple and she finished it.
that was, again, beginner's luck. The first year I seriously did it, I grew for a wedding. I grew 800 tulips or so. I planted about 1,000.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was very lucky that they all bloomed and they weren't eaten. And I'm so naive to even risk that. And they bloomed the week of the wedding. But I would never do that again. I mean, I don't know what I was thinking when
right.
I did that.
Right. Mother Nature was shining her loving eyes on you or something.
Yeah, encouraging me. So I was hoping to get more weddings this summer. I got 3.
Mm-hmm. What would be ideal? One every other week?
Yeah.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah,
right?
No, that would be what would be ideal? Yes, somewhere between mm-hmm. 4 and 8 mm-hmm. for the season.
You'll get that next year.
We'll see.
We'll put it out there.
Yes, I do think that positive thinking helps. and I'm just kind of puzzled that we didn't.
Uh-huh.
But
does it matter? Are you relying on word of mouth, or how are you promoting?
I have a website. I belong to associate. I think I'm doing the right things, mm-hmm. unless I wanted to spend a few thousand on advertising.
Sure.
And the little advertising that I've done and the wedding expo that I've done did not yield one phone call. So I did 6 months in one publication. I did a few wedding expos, and I have not gotten one call.
Yeah.
So the Roundup Valley Growers Association that I belong to, which is the least expensive, I've actually gotten calls from them, the people that are really looking for local flowers for weddings.
R-O-U-N-D, round up?
Round out.
Okay.
R-O-N-D, out.
Oh, round out.
So that's growers of all sorts, from
not just flowers.
To flowers, to right. everything.
How interesting. Yeah. Well, that's in, so people are maybe contacting them for...
They have a directory.
Okay, or for food sources or whatever, and then they see that there's flowers.
I guess. Mm-hmm. But they are actively looking for flowers, the people that have called mm-hmm. me. And I haven't gotten a lot of calls, but I have gotten some calls, and I've got, you know, I got a wedding out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the others just haven't yielded anything. And I also think there's a very excellent florist in our area. And although I'm on the preferred vendor list of three people.
That's what I was going to ask
places,
you. Yeah, at the venues.
I haven't gotten any calls, and I think they've cornered the market, although our look is very different. But I don't feel like, I mean, I'm not competing with them because they're very high-end
right,
weddings.
Right,
so I'll have to, we'll see. But mm-hmm. just last week, I got two calls out of the blue.
For next year. Wow.
So I do know that the mm-hmm. brides are planning much longer in advance than I thought they were. So.
Mm-hmm. And that could be ultimately depending. Maybe we should talk about. You said you wanted to get my thoughts on what I'm seeing other groups do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one model is the North Bay Flower Collective. Mm-hmm. North Bay Flower. There's no growers in that. North Bay Flower Collective. With their website, and they have about half of the members are florists and half of the members are farmers, and probably of that, there's about maybe a quarter overlap of 25% of people who do growing and design. And I think their attitude is, and you know, Sonoma County is maybe more, even though it seems like all they do is drive, but they maybe are a little less geographic spread than Hudson Valley. Not Hudson Bay. Sorry about that. okay. Maybe it was mashing up North Bay and Hudson Valley. Mm-hmm. That's how I got it.
Mm-hmm.
But the website and, you know, doing, which is mainly just has a photo and a contact information for each participating florist or farmer, that's something. And they've done a lot of events. And they put their, it kind of like the training, they put their energy into a few community-oriented events, like a flower festival and the big heirloom expo that mm-hmm. Baker Creek Seeds does, which is, you know, kind of handy to have that down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a few other ag-related things in that area mm-hmm. that have just allowed them to let the consumer know that there's flower farmers
yeah.
here.
Mm-hmm.
And so that seems to be more of a group that exists for membership business, like mm-hmm. you're discussing, mm-hmm. flowers being transacted, but then also reaching out to put your, you know, yeah. put the area on the map. And I could see that Hudson Valley Flower Festival kind of cooking up and being,
oh, yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
But it's hard to do that. What I know that Hedda Borstrom, who led it last year from Full Bloom Farm, she said, never again will she do a flower festival in September when she's at the peak of her wedding season
right.
and her production season.
Yeah,
so
yeah, it's insane.
And it was hot and a bunch of other stuff.
Oh, you heard that.
That.
Yeah, it was sounded like people were like on the verge of fainting, you know. So,
yeah.
But I think that this is something I'd like to keep trying to document and then share resources back out to groups, because it mm-hmm. seems that there are different models of people who just, like, there's a group called the Three Rivers Farmer Florist group in Pittsburgh,
mm-hmm.
and you can find them on Facebook. They just have a Facebook mm-hmm. Page or group, but they seem to get together and they seem to share resources. I see sometimes things like, you know, I had a crop failure, I really need, you know, XYZ, and can anybody, you know, help me, and mm-hmm. Or people looking for apprentices or farm managers,
mm-hmm.
And there's several of those Facebook groups as well.
I mean, I'd love to be able to support you, and
yeah.
you know, the podcast will help. Maybe when I run this, maybe say, you know, get in touch with somebody at this table, mm-hmm. maybe, you know, mm-hmm. to put your name on the list. Who
yeah,
maintains
absolutely.
That the list group?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
they can reach out to me.
It's
directly.
A Google group.
Yeah.
A Google.
The Gmail
list. Gmail
list.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not even a group. But
do you use it, or do you just put out a like if you somebody had a need,
yeah.
you could just hit
yeah.
send and it would go
yeah.
out to everybody.
Yep. So
yeah.
Exactly.
There's a kind of a trust level there. Nobody's
yeah.
just abusing it or anything.
No, and
yeah.
we're still a pretty small group
mm-hmm.
Of folks, and we, for the most part, we all know each other. So
Yeah.
What? I wouldn't say that because I feel like there's tons of people I haven't met yet. So I kind of was hoping that more people would come to this part.
Yeah.
And because it sort of feels a little bit like we're on a precipice, but we don't really have a plan going forward except to just kind of keep doing what we're doing. Like you said, in the ways that it's meeting our needs. But if we did decide to take a concerted direction, we would need the influence or the
buy-in.
Buy-in, yeah. And we would need what am I trying to say? Not the influence, the we need people here saying what they want for the group. Yeah.
Right.
And they're not here.
Right.
So I was really thinking
it'd
be cool to
Maybe if we had held this in November it would have been
yeah.
And I think with our workshop too and our I would never want to do a summer workshop in July again, and you know, and this kind of great opportunity. And thank you, Deborah, for coming out.
I'm glad.
But I know so many people are just too swamped,
just
too exhausted,
burned out.
And they've got the wrapping up weddings and just the last hurrah, trying to sell what they can at the end of the season. And so I think our readings really need to be in the dead of winter, which Stone Barn,
some are,
which we did,
absolutely.
Yeah.
But I also think. You know, people come and they show up when they see potential and they need something and they want to contribute.
Yeah.
And so I'm also, like, part of me is really happy to keep it a loose network if that's really what people want at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's kind of like the transportation thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when somebody hits a tipping point to make it happen and can take the lead and really push it, they will.
Mm-hmm.
Just the workshop. Right. We hit a point, we really wanted it, we pushed it forward and made it happen.
Yeah.
So I think it's, you know, it's natural and it will evolve and into what we...
Well, especially that example, you weren't going to sit around and wait for the group to create a, you know, a transportation strategy. You knew that would be long in coming, but you needed a transportation strategy, so you just jumped in and made it happen.
Yeah, I need to make my business work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but there'll be a time when you'll be advising everybody else. So when you're the pioneer and you're out there first, that's a problem.
So we do have some other group members.
Oh, good.
Arriving.
Oh, good. I'll put this on pause.
It's okay.
Well, just to segue, Jenny from Tiny Hearts Farm and Copaic, New York, past guest of this podcast, is here with Emily, one of her team, I guess. And we were talking about transportation and... Angela was described how she's getting flowers to customers, and I know you and I talked about this over a year ago when you were on the podcast. But can you give us an update on how that's working for you, or is it? Or
We ended up buying 2 delivery vans.
What size are they, and would people be interested in knowing the models? I don't know.
They're
trucks.
they are passenger vans, 15 seaters, I think, which we took the seats out of, and we got those because one, they can go on the parkways up here, which is a big deal.
Oh, the narrower park. I see. Because sometimes trucks aren't allowed.
Yeah, trucks aren't allowed on parkways.
Okay.
So these are, and also they have the AC vents all the way down the back. So that's why we got those. But even with those, we still are doing a lot of delivery sharing with our neighbors. We're part of an agriculture center, and we have 3 other farms there. Last time I talked to you, we had 2 other farms there. Now we have 3.
But they're all food farmers, right?
They're all food farmers, but we're pretty much all going to the same places, New York City and around Westchester and the Hudson Valley. So we joint hired a driver with our neighbor this year with MX Morningstar, and we have a swapping delivery kind of thing going on with one of our other neighbors. So
because
you know
often?
A lot of people want flowers all on the same day, right? Like everybody wants flowers on Thursdays.
Everyone.
So it's hard to like hit all those places on Thursdays. So that's what we've been able to work out so far.
Because you have two vehicles, or
Either having 2 vehicles or just sharing with our vegetable neighbors who also restaurants want their vegetables on Thursdays apparently.
And when do you start, and how long does it go through the season?
We started really late this year. We didn't get down to the city until the first week of July.
Why was that, Jenny?
Or the second week in July, maybe, because he was born June 30th.
Yeah, so, you have a child now.
Yeah.
So we were late this year, and
we'll go as long as we can. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm hoping we have mums in the greenhouse. So I'm hoping to be able to go till November.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
And are you mainly selling to wedding and event designers or retail flower shops or a combination?
You can combination, I think.
Want me to put this on pause for a sec?
Oh, I don't think he's going to stop. He's happy. He's happy. He's just it's like he's talking. He wants
Deborah,
to participate.
Deborah, interview me.
Yeah. I have a lot to say about flower farming.
You don't have to put a soundtrack music in the background
because
we'll have
thin.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, jeez.
Mark, fun.
Yeah.
But if you didn't have those deliveries, you'd have a lot of flowers unsold, right? Because of the radius of where you're able to sell. Copaic is about two hours north of New York? Or
yeah, two hours, a little more than 2 hours in traffic. Yeah, it's really helpful. It also lets us grow the kind of flowers that we want to grow, because I feel like otherwise, you know, we started doing farmers markets, and you can only grow so many zinnias and sunflowers before you get bored. And that's all they want, it seems like. So
there are also flowers that probably can kind of make it through a hot day at the farmer's market without refrigeration, right? I mean,
absolutely. Yeah.
That's probably an issue, too.
Mm-hmm. So we can experiment more and try different things, I think, selling to wedding designers.
Mm-hmm. And are you just kind of a peripheral member of this group now because you just had such a busy year? Or I mean, we were talking like what this group could become and what the possibilities are.
Yeah, last time I talked to you, I was in such a different place.
We talked about you wanting to make this delivery program stronger and more formalized, and that you've done that. So congratulations. I mean, it's
I've done it with my close neighbors there, but we haven't hooked it up with the flower growers in the area. You know, it's been my immediate, like my next door neighbors that and it has worked out. And it is good to try it out with those guys too, because you know we're working out like we're sharing a driver, but who pays for him what days when he's making stops for both of us, and how do you divide it up by how much each of you is selling that day? That's kind of crazy because, you know, a bucket of scabiosa, right, costs a lot more than a bucket of sunflower, so that doesn't seem to make sense. Or what if one of you has a delivery that everything's in a straight line, which most of our deliveries are on a route, but then there's one order that's way off. How do you compensate the driver? Who pays? So we're working a lot of that stuff out this year.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
We're seeing.
I mean, I
don't really have any answers yet, but...
But the learning that comes from that, I mean, I think that those are the same questions that would come from, like, any kind of collaborative flower distribution.
Yeah.
Is, like, yeah.
How like, you'd want to know that, because you'll partner with other people, right?
Yeah. I mean, how do you make it... How do you figure out all those details?
Yeah. Yeah, and how do you make it fair for everybody?
Mm-hmm. And for their business and their model. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. And there has to be such a level of trust and you know, just... working out how to maintain that, and we're trying. Yeah,
that's great.
Well, one of the things that occurred to me is, depending on what you want to do with the group, you could seek some kind of grant funding to help pay the cost to formalize, you know, a 501c3, or to create some kind of website, or you know, whatever. It seems like the kind of thing that a county or a state ag promotion pool of funds could get behind, or even matching. But I, you know, it's hard when nobody has time to just step forward and be the leader.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked a little bit about that before you got here, just that Angela said, hey, I'm happy to have this just be kind of informal at this point until it becomes a critical issue for enough people.
Well, and I think, too, so many of us are still in our first 2 to 5 years of our businesses, which are the most insane. You're growing so much. You're learning so much. You're probably the most financially unstable. And I think as people's businesses mature and as we figure out what our niche is and what do we really need and what can we really afford and what markets really work for us, then I think...
It's a little too premature.
Things will shape, you know, take shape. And And the collaborations are happening where we want them to at the moment and what we can handle. And
yeah, I think that's neat.
Yeah.
I'm just hearing how you all do business with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do design work as well at Tiny Hearts? And so are you ever in a position to buy from, needing to buy from other farmers, or do you pretty much have what you need?
We buy from other farmers occasionally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we try to steer people into
buying your stuff.
Yeah, or just using what's in the field at the time. It doesn't always happen. Blue Buck sunflowers for me the other week. Yeah.
Oh, I see. Because the perfect world would be, hey, just we'll design your wedding with everything that grows here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That would be ideal, yeah. Right? For us to just walk out to the field and this is what the wedding is this week. But sometimes people have specific requests, and
that's the most profitable, or maybe the most profitable is foraging, as Mary Beth and I were talking about that.
Free money, you called it.
I did.
It is. It also is very time intensive.
Yeah. Labor costs are high. Yeah, we do a lot of it. Labor costs are high.
Is it on your own farm or just on nearby areas?
On our own farm and our neighbor's farm. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I know every abandoned bush in Copaig. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you're right.
You have to drive to forage. That takes time, too.
Uh-huh, yeah, it does.
There was a wonderful flower shop in Marin, California. It doesn't exist anymore. But it might exist, but the owner has changed. But the previous owner, it was called Local Flora, which is a perfect name. And she had this program called Green for Your Greens, and it was on her website, and it was sort of this barter program with customers saying, you know, if you've got this big old heirloom rose or this overgrown rhododendron or overgrown hydrangea, bring, you know, here's how we want it cut, and bring a bucket, and we'll give you a store credit for flowers. So the labor was taken care of in
that
case.
That's brilliant.
That is brilliant.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. And then then people feel so invested in the success of that business then, because they're
part of it.
Their product is showing up there, right?
Yeah, they're so in it. That's so
and in a similar way, that's happening at the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market, which I used to be on the board, now I'm on the marketing committee, and we have a few florists who are also have cutting gardens. And if they have a wedding in one pallet, they'll cut everything else in the wrong pallet and bring it down to the market and sell it. You know, basically it's on consignment, but it would just not be harvested otherwise. And they usually have the juiciest stuff. Like right now, one girl has autumn clematis, and every single stem is, you know, being snatched up. During dogwood season, people were bringing enormous flowering branches of dogwoods from the neighbor's property. And it was sort of just a way to monetize what you know other florists want. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. That could be kind of a fun...
Yeah, that's a great idea.
All right, anybody else want to jump in with anything? Emily, how did you get into flower farming?
I was part of like a small garden in Saratoga, New York, and just sort of wanted to expand and work more full-time, and I stumbled upon Jenny,
How far is that from Copaig, Saratoga?
It's like an hour and 15.
Oh, okay. So now you're apprenticing, or are you farming?
I'm farming, yeah. I'm doing both. Last year, I did a little bit more part-time. It was mostly like half floral design, half farming, and now it's full-time farming. And it's been interesting, yeah.
Interesting.
It's September 18th, right, or 17th, yeah. So you're a little burnt out probably.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now it's back to like more... like wedding stuff, floral stuff. So it's like kind of right when I was like physically getting burnt out of like the hot fields, kind of, you know, weeding mania. Now it's like, okay, we get to hang in the barn and do flowers.
Remind me how much acreage you have, Jenny.
We have 15. We're growing on 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And Emily's our superstore designer. And
what a nice fit, because you can design together.
Well, and I really prefer the farming end of things, so it's nice to have somebody who
loves that.
Yeah, who loves that.
And do you have any other employees for the season, or?
Yeah, we have two others. We have Sage, who's also a great designer and has farmed, done vegetable farming also, and we have Kevin
So yeah, we have 3 full-time plus our driver.
So that really helps this year, especially.
Oh, yeah. Oh gosh.
Because Luke was like, I can't do this by myself.
Poor Luke has been so overwhelmed. Yeah. And he's got his own thing, too. You know, he's playing at the Monterey Jazz Festival, like, right now.
No way. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so it's been overwhelming.
Does he want to go visit a local flower farm while he's there? I should hook him up.
They've got him on tour. But in December, we're going back to visit my family. And yes, absolutely.
Okay. Much for joining today's conversation. I meant to add a huge thanks to the team at Etsy in Hudson, New York. They were particularly supportive and shared their meeting space with us, as well as a wonderful hospitality, and we couldn't have gathered at a central location without that support. Please visit DeborahPrinzing.com for the episode 267 show notes to see photos and more details about those interviewed today. I'll also add links to everyone's social places so you can start following them if you don't already. The Slow Flowers podcast has been downloaded more than 123,000 times by listeners like you. Thank you to each one of you for downloading, listening, commenting, and sharing. It means so much. If you value the content you receive each week, I invite you to show your thanks and support the Slow Flowers podcast with a donation. The button can be found on our homepage in the right column. We hope to produce transcripts of each episode, although it costs $50 to $75 per episode to do the transcription, editing, and preparation for download. Your contributions will help make this possible. And eventually, we'll go back and transcribe the archives, the full archives, if we're able to raise enough funds. Thank you to our lead sponsor for 2016, Certified American Grown Flowers. The Certified American Grown program and label provide a guarantee for designers and consumers on the source of their flowers. Take pride in your flowers and buy with confidence. Ask for Certified American Grown Flowers. To learn more, visit AmericanGrownFlowers.org. More sponsor thanks goes to Syndicate Sales, an American manufacturer of vases and accessories for the professional florist. Look for the American flag icon to find Syndicate's USA-made products and join the Syndicate Stars loyalty program at syndicatesales.com. A big bouquet of thanks goes to Longfield Gardens, providing home gardeners with high-quality flower bulbs and perennials. Their online store offers plants for every region and every season, from tulips and daffodils to dahlias, caladiums, and amaryllis. Visit them at lfgardens.com. A fond thank you to Arctic Alaska Peonies, a cooperative of 50 family farms in the heart of Alaska, providing high-quality, American-grown peony flowers during the months of July and August. Visit them at arcticalaskapeonies.com. And finally, thank you, Association of Special Teacup Flower Growers. Formed in 1988, ASCFG was created to educate, unite, and support commercial cut flower growers. Its mission is to help growers produce high-quality floral material and to foster and promote the local availability of that product. Learn more at ascfg.org. Next week, you're invited to join me in putting more American-grown flowers on the table, one vase at a time. And if you like what you hear, please consider logging on to iTunes and posting a listener review. The content and opinions expressed here are either mine alone or those of my guests alone, independent of any podcast sponsor or other person, company, or organization. The Slow Flowers podcast is engineered and edited by Andrew and Hannah Brenlin. Learn more about their work at shellandtree.com.